Hello and welcome to the Wolves Report. I'm Ryan Lester and thank you for joining us for episode 94. Tonight, I'm joined by two men who were tighter than a Wolves January transfer window. Welcome back, Nocky and Tyler. Long trip last night for these gents. Fair play to them again for coming on after a tough evening. And I spent Saturday afternoon with Nocky at Villa Park. Tonight, we're going to look back at the Villa game, Burnley match and player analysis. Talk about O'Neill's home truths in his post-match. I don't know if it was a rant or is he stating the truth. I'd love your opinions on that. Take your questions and look ahead to Saturday's game against West Ham. Nocky, take us back to Villa Park on Saturday afternoon. Not the part when I turned up with a minute gone, but the part about the game. I'd love to get your take on Aston Villa 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1.
Yeah. It felt really strange, actually. It was hanging over me all week, actually, coming into the game. I was very sort of nervous. I was expecting a little bit of a kick in. And then when we come out the ground, as soon as I left the ground, I was over it, in all honesty. It was a real strange game. I didn't expect anything out of it. I think I went 3-0 on the podcast, and that's what I thought it would be because of the striker situation. We were probably a little bit better, probably in the first half, than I thought we were going to be. We held the ball reasonably well. There was some decent movement. We had a good chance with Ait Nouri, but, you know, you could argue we should have scored it, Ben. He's also a left wing back, so, you know, you've got to have a little bit of balance in there. But we just never looked like scoring, really, after that. I think if we'd have took that chance, we've got something to hold on to, then maybe we get something out of the game. But in a game, when you're playing a good Villa side, and although they didn't overawe us, I always felt that they were in control of the game. And when you're playing against a team like that, you've got to score first, really. As soon as the first goal goes in, then you're always going to put yourself in trouble. And it was quite similar, in my opinion, to the West Brom game, that although the score wasn't a hammering, one team just felt considerably better than the other one. I just felt that they had more stability, more control, and they had more options as well. That we brought substitutes on didn't affect the game. They were able to bring the substitutes on when we were getting a little bit of control, because I felt for the first 15 minutes of the second half, we were probably the better team, and they were able to just change things around a little bit and make it a bit more difficult for us, and took the game away from us with the second goal. I think the only real disappointment for me is both goals are poor. I think the first one goes through Sarr. You've also got Kilman back on the line, who probably should do better. And then the second one, I don't even know what he's trying to do with that. It's just an awful cross that's ended up in the back of the net. So,
yeah, I think we've got a bit unfortunate with the second goal, haven't we? But, I mean, he could try that a thousand times. It's only going to go in once.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the scoreline did reflect the game in the end. I think there were a couple of goals better than us, in my opinion. But we certainly weren't, you know, we weren't dominated. We weren't outclassed. It was just a professional performance where they kept us at arm's length, I think. But, you know, you can't go into a game like that without a real recognised striker. And he just kept coming back. And that's what we sort of predicted it would do. It just keeps coming back all the time because they're an experienced outfit. They've had a bit of luck this season. They've had a lot of luck with VAR, but you're not in the top four with six or seven games left unless you deserve to be there. So it was a difficult afternoon for us. It could have been worse, in all honesty, but, you know, I've got no criticism of the players, really. They worked hard. They did what they could. We just didn't have enough quality in the side to affect the game.
Yeah, fair analysis, Nocky. Tyler, if I was going to say there was one thing that I was frustrated with, and I know the options were limited, but I really think Wolves and Mario Lemina are worse off when he's out of position. Now, Mario, for that half a game when I think Neto got injured, he looked like he was playing everywhere. He looked like he could play anywhere. But when he started a Premier League game and you've got sort of a holding midfielder playing as a wide man, it weakens probably your strongest midfielder and you're at that area of the pitch and he doesn't really get a chance to do himself justice. Could we have done anything different? Should we have played your best players in their best positions?
I don't know, to be honest. It worked, didn't it, for half an hour against Fulham, but it hasn't worked since then. It didn't work at Cardiff, it didn't work at Villa, and luckily the experiment came to an end last night, didn't it? And hopefully we might not see it again. But I don't know what I don't really know what he could have done differently selection wise. The only obvious one was to bring Bueno in and put Ait Nouri a bit higher, wasn't it? And in hindsight that might have worked, but you don't know, do you? But I mean, I got a bit of stick on Twitter on Saturday for saying I thought Doyle was average at best. And, you know, Lemina and Gomez have to be our midfield too. And that's the point I was trying to make. And it was interesting last night after that Doyle's the one that misses out and those two are paired again together, isn't it? So we're just a better side when we've talked about this 100 times. We're just a better side when those two are together in the middle. and they know each other's game inside out. They cover for each other. We're just better for it. So in hindsight, yes, but I can see why you did it, because you can't keep flogging these kids, can you? I'm sure we're going to talk about it a bit later, but you can probably only afford to get away with one of them in the side at the moment, can't you? And, you know, he obviously doesn't fancy playing more than one at a time, and that's where we are at the moment, and we'll come on to it, because there's a lot of talk, isn't it, at the moment about Fosun and O'Neill in his interview last night. We are where we are, and we can't be surprised by it, and we've just got to take it on the chin and get on with it, really.
Noki, sticking on the subject of Doyle, at Villa Park, what I did think he was good was his range of passing. I think he picked out Semedo with some lovely passes a few times, but he was involved when conceding goals. I think he lost the ball, or did he lost the ball for the second goal when they broke away. So maybe he's been dropped for that. But as Tyler said, João Gomes and Mario Lemina are Wolves' best pair. That's where they should be starting every game.
Yeah, I'm with Tyler on this one. I thought he had a really poor game. I was quite surprised that everyone was lauding him when I got back on, all on Twitter, to people talking about him being man of the match. And we all see the game differently, don't we? And, you know, everyone's got an opinion and they're entitled to it. But I felt some of his passes were going astray. He was involved in the second goal. He lost the ball. He just didn't have that. He's had a bit of spite about him, a little bit of a snap in the recent games he's been in, but he just didn't seem to be able to get a grip of the game. And Chris is absolutely right. Our best midfield is Gomes and Lemina. So whatever else we're doing, you've got to have those two together, because that gives you a foothold and it gives you a chance to play yourself into the game. You've got that little bit of stability in front of your back line, whether you're going to play a two or a three or whatever you're going to do at the back. It gives you just a little bit more stability in front of them, and it just doesn't work with Lemina on the wing. He'll play there, he'll work there, he'll do the best he can, but it's not his position, so you're not going to get the best out of him. But yeah, I think Doyle, you know, he'll do a job for you. And I think with the money that it's going to cost us to bring him in, it's an absolute no-brainer. But I think if everybody's fit, he probably doesn't make the team, does he?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm not going to spend too long on the Villa game, because I think we all deep down knew. I know I predicted us to win, but I think you've gone 1-0 and 2-0, haven't you? Or 2-0 and 3-0. So it was a tough afternoon. It was the worst thing for me, and it's a weird thing, because you said the next day you were over it. I was as well, because I think we all knew it was coming. Now, that's not the attitude you should have, and it didn't really feel like anything else was going to happen. I mean, if Aiden Norrie scores, it might be a different conversation, but then they've got players to bring on and change the game. So I don't think anyone gave up. I think everyone gave absolutely everything. You say Villa had more gears, maybe, but I don't think Jose Sarr was hardly being pumped, and Wolves were pegged back, and it was pump, pump, pump. I think defensively in midfield was all right. It was just like against Cov, when the ball keeps coming back again and again and again, eventually they're going to find openings, aren't they? Chiwome, I thought, was all right. You know what I mean? He was neat and tidy, but I don't think he's going to open up a game by himself yet. He's just a kid. I wouldn't blame him for that. So, but let's not spend too long on the Villa game, because I think we all knew that was coming. But let's more have you were there last night driving up the motorway at 200 miles an hour, Tyler. Give us your take on a Burnley 1, Wolves 1.
I think, just to go on to your point there about us probably all expecting to go to Villa and lose, and there seemed to be a similar vibe last night, didn't there? And I don't know if there's a bit of a small-time mentality creeping back in, but we were driving up there and we sort of said, what are the teams come to Turf Moor this season thinking they might probably get beat? And that's what we were going with, because it's just where we are at the moment, isn't it? You can't keep flogging the same players. You can't keep overworking them. I mean, again, effort-wise, I thought the players were fantastic last night. You can't fault anybody. We lack a bit of quality in forward areas, but we know that. The clean sheets seem to be avoiding us again. You know, we know that. But you can't fault any of the players and their effort and commitment from last night. And I think that was probably the biggest takeaway. But you go into a team that have won one home game all season, fearing the worst. And I don't think that's a great position to be in when you're sort of 10th in the league and you've had such a positive, you know, third to a half of a season. I think it's where we are. We talked about, we worried the season might peter out. I mean, it's fizzling out with less than a fart at the moment, isn't it, if we're honest? And me and you have had a couple of friendly bets, haven't we, Ryan, about where Wolves might finish and how many games we might win. And it's just the firepower, isn't it? We're just severely lacking in that area.
Yeah, but I don't... I'm just jumping there, Chris.
player-wise or manager-wise. I thought they did everything they could.
Yeah, that's what I was about to jump on to. It feels like it's fizzing out a little bit in terms of the results and the lack of excitement, but I don't think it's fizzing out in terms of the application and desire. I think the players, again, all gave absolutely everything. I think Nocky might want to pull one out. He might disagree with me on there, but I think the players are absolutely giving it all. The tracking. You could see with 20 minutes to go, there was players out on their legs just grafting last night. It was a bit of a sloppy goal to concede. People are saying, does Doc follow his runner there? Is he the wrong side of Nelson? Either way, credit to that goal. It's a really good finish. On the run from there, it's a great finish. Should someone be taking responsibility and following the runner? I think so. But
you can't have that much space, can you? You can't. No. At this level, you can't have that much time and space at the back post. There was no one within 15 yards of him.
Do you think that was a case of because the shape was different? Because obviously it was a back four with the two centre-backs and Semedo was there and obviously Doc on the right. Do you think it was something different to do with that?
No, because we did the same against Villa, didn't we? We gave away a free kick, which, by the way, I don't think it was a free kick last night or against Villa.
No.
But we did exactly the same. One ball down to the left channel completely caught us out, and it happened again against Burnley, and the kid's completely free. And you have to look at it in different ways. I mean, it was really good movement with Villa for them to get into space and play the RB in. But this one, I don't think they've really done anything clever. I just think they've worked the ball to the far post. And you know, he's not hit it from 30, 40 yards. He's inside the penalty area. You should never have that much space from a set piece inside the penalty area. It's absolutely scandalous defending. And whether it's due to the shape or whatever, or whether they just switched off, is pretty irrelevant, really. Professional footballers should never be caught out like that. Not against a team who were really struggling and low on confidence. To give them that much space and give them an opportunity to get their nose in front was pretty ridiculous.
Fair point, though, from Rocker, sorry, that the Villa one, by the way, was never a foul for the first goal. And the one last night was never a foul for the first goal. And we talked about it, that the dialogue at the start of the season around letting tackles go and letting the game flow, that's just gone out the window again, hasn't it? Because everything now is being pulled back again. The amount of fouls last night the ref was given, for both teams, to be fair, just, I know I've got a bit off piece, but they just need to let the game flow a bit. They just weren't fouls.
I mean, if you take the extreme of that on Sunday's game on the TV, there was two sides, Man City and Arsenal, were kicking lumps out of each other.
Yeah.
And although it was frustrating because I had a bookings bet, it was a free game of football where they were lumping each other up in the air. There was no malice. Yeah. It was just foul after foul and desire. And it worked. And it was frustrating for anyone like me that had had any sort of booking bets on any players. People were just getting free chance after chance. And it worked. Yes, I don't want it to be booting everyone up in the air. But despite it being not the most exciting game on Sunday with Man City and Arsenal, it was free-flowing as much as possible because the ref let things go. Whereas, as you said last night, Tyler, it was poleless.
And someone's just put a comment there. Yeah, I agree. Our foul goal wasn't a foul. Never in a million years. They're just not free kicks. You've just got to let the play go. And it's all well and good company having a go about that one. But theirs was as bad for me. But I know we've got a bit off track, but it's that consistency again that we talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to our goal, Nocky. Nice assist from Sarabia, by the way.
Lovely
ball in the box. Probably the only thing he did the whole game, but still, key factor, Nocky. You're not expecting Ryan Aitnori to be jumping up in the box and head knocking one in the corner.
Just on Sarabia.
I'm doing it
now because it's been winding me up. He's a phenomenal player. He's a really good player, and it was an excellent ball into the box. But he had I'm not even saying it was a 50-50. He had a 60-40 against the keeper. And you can see as he runs to it, he's absolutely terrified, and he just bananas his run. So it looks like he can't get there in time. If he gets there and touches the ball, keeper brings him down, it's a red card, or he gets around him and he's in on goal. It was absolutely fuming. But I weren't alone, to be fair. The whole of the end, apart from Tyler, was absolutely raging. But anyway,
I was still in awe of that delivery for the goal, so I'm sorry.
Not another assist, Tyler.
I'd never play him again if it was me after that.
It's got to be double figures now, isn't it, Tyler? Anyway, we've had our little Nocky rant. But yeah, Nocky, Aitnori, the man of the moment, scoring Wolves goals, left wing back, heading, getting me on the end of things. It's fair play to him. It's a great header.
I mean, me and Tyler were talking about Aitnori actually on the trying to get out the car park for 3.5 hours. But it was, we've got to get him out of the left wing back position. We've absolutely got to get him out of there and get him into a central position, because he's such a good attacking player. His footwork, he's probably the best footwork I've ever seen from a Wolves player. He's so quick, the way that he moves the ball and manipulates it. And he's got a real eye for goal, and he got himself free in the second half as well. And he probably should have squared it, and it's a tapping, or he probably should have finished it. But, you know, this is a guy who's playing left wing back, and he's just getting better and better. The quality that guy has, and the ball in, it is a good ball in, but he gets himself into space. He had a little bit of an instinct about him, and he doesn't even have to jump. He's just read the ball as it's coming. It's a nod back across the keeper. It's a brilliant finish. And it's, you know, it was probably a little bit against the run of play. And I think the only frustrating thing was, is I thought we may kick on after that. But wasn't to be in the end. But yeah, it was a really nice goal. At the time, we needed it as well. I don't think we could afford to go in half-time a goal down.
In terms of the performance, I talk about the shape, and someone's got an interesting letter on about Wolves recently matching the shape of their opponents in some games. I'm not sure with what was on offer. I know what you said, Tyler, about how many teams would expect to go to Turf Moor and probably we've got a chance of losing. But what more? Because I was quite happy with the changes, to be honest. It looked a bit better than it did at Villa, but it should do against Burnley. But is there anything else we could have done last night, Tyler? Because I'm not sure with what we had available, what more we could have done.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably about what we could have done, really. And I thought, you know, Docherty had a decent game, to be fair. You know, he got in some good positions. He makes the off-the-ball runs that are clever. Even if we don't find him, it takes a player away. He won a lot of his headers, a lot of his battle. I thought he did well. And it was a fluid system. It was a bit of a sort of a hybrid back four to then a three, and trying to get Docherty and Tomato forward and Bueno the other side. It was fluid to a point. It was meant to be fluid. I don't think the game allowed it to be fluid necessarily. But I don't really see what else we can do. I thought Chiwobi worked extremely hard. And like Nocker said in game, you just want him putting tackles in, winning free kicks, winning corners, blocking. That's all you can really ask of an 18-year-old. And I thought he did that side of the game very well. There does seem to be a hesitancy from the more senior players sometimes to trust him and pass the ball. But I think
that was the same with Fraser. That's the same with Fraser, wasn't it?
But I see why, because every time they did it, the centre-half gobbled him up every single time, got in front of him, nicked the ball away. So they've got to get better at that pretty quickly. But I don't see what else we can do. I mean, seeing Kuna for 20 minutes was delightful, wasn't it? And that does hopefully bring a different dynamic moving forward. But I'd say that's about our team at the moment, really, yeah.
I think he learned from the Villa game, didn't he? Because we were talking about it, Roy, and we should have had the three stinkers in midfield. We needed to put the three across.
I know you're going to. I remember just about not many things I remember from Saturday. That was one of the signs of abuse.
But you wanted the three across the middle just to make it a little bit more difficult. And I think he's maybe looked against Burnley and thought, I need to get some kind of sense back into that central midfield area. But I mean, I tweeted after the game that it was a difficult watch, and we were lacking quality, and some people took umbrage to it. And it wasn't a dig at the players, because I think the players are doing the best apart from Sarabia. I think they're all working hard and putting a real shift in. But the reality is it was a difficult watch because they were getting a lot of chances. I mean, I know we'll talk about the players, but Sarr was absolutely fantastic. He kept us in the game. And there was a lack of quality as well. And there's it's your most important position on the pitch, arguably, your striker, because that's what you hold the ball up, you bring in other players. And if you haven't got that player in and around that area, it doesn't matter what you do in the defence in the midfield, it's just not going to stick. It's going to keep coming back. So it was hard yesterday. It was a hard game, but they were all out on their feet. They all absolutely worked their socks off. And it was just we are where we are at the minute, and there's reasons for it, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit. But in terms of the players on the pitch and what they put into the game, I'm not going to knock any of them. They all put in what they could. My only concern is, are we doing any damage to your Frasers and your Chiwobi? Because they're players who've been bought in, you know, we think you can do a job, we think you're ready, and they're getting absolutely eaten up. And at their age, there can be a little bit of an effect to that. Because we all know that in reality, they shouldn't be anywhere near the first team. They should be out in the lower leagues, cutting their teeth, learning the trade and developing. And we're putting them up against big, heavy centre-halves who know every trick in the book, and they're just getting eaten alive at the minute. And it's a bit of a concern.
You're listening and watching episode 94 of the Wolves Report. Mark Knott, Chris Tyler and myself, Ryan Lester. Someone's put a question in. My friend Dave Walker, I don't know if he's back from Australia yet or not. This is a really interesting one, the centre forwards. It's gone off piste a bit. By the way, as always, the show is recorded live. So if you're watching live on Twitter, YouTube or Facebook, you can put your comments up. Any questions, we'll get up as many as we can. Dave Walkon asks, do you think Fabio will be doing a better job for us right now? That's the main bit of that question for me. I think the answer is definitely yes. But hindsight's a wonderful thing, Dave. We wasn't expecting all our forward line to go out. But what I would say, and I don't want to eat in too much of these questions later on, Wolves are guilty of not getting another forward in, because when Sasha goes and Fabio goes, and I think Gary O'Neill alluded to it yesterday, we're all expecting another forward to come in. So hindsight's a wonderful thing. But just to go back to your question, and I think this will be unanimous, would Fabio be doing better than what we've had on offer at the moment? 100%, I think he would.
I don't think it's fair to compare him to an 18-year-old kid, though. I think that's a little bit harsh on the lads we've brought through. Fabio would be a better option than we've got now, because we've got absolutely no options. But I think we were all relatively unanimous that he needed to go. It wasn't going to work for the club. So
we're unanimous if we loan somebody.
Yeah, and that was the key. It's not fair to compare him with the kids who are coming through, because they're not at the stage of the career where they should be in the same position as Fabio. What you can compare him against is the business that we should have done, which we didn't do. That's where the comparison needs to be, not the players coming through. I don't think that's a real fair comparison, to be honest.
Fair enough. I mean, Adrian's that angry with you. He calls you Nicky. I'll take issue with Nicky's comment on youngsters. Other teams putting youngsters in, but the quality is better. And he just corrects himself and say Nocky afterwards. But yeah.
I wouldn't argue with that. But what I would say is that other teams seem to have a better youth system than us and create better players. Liverpool seem to bring players in that are ready-made players to go into the teams. We don't seem to do that. So you can throw as many 18-year-olds in as you want, but they've got to be at the level to do it. And we know that the players that we're bringing into those positions aren't of the level that we're doing it, which is why we're putting ourselves in a position and making our players struggle. So it's not about blooding the 18-year-olds. Wayne Rooney was, 16, 17 when he came through, because he was a quality player. If they're not good enough to come in, then you don't play them.
Just a quick question on that, though, Tyler. I mean, you're playing two fullbacks in midfield. You've got four fullbacks, two holding midfielders, two centre-backs, a kid there and a floating number 10. Let's say Wolves have got their strongest team and you put Fraser or you put Chiwomi in there. I think you get a totally different look to their game, because if they've got quality either side of them, and I think they're being judged quite harsh because they're not really getting a lot of quality, because there isn't a lot of quality around them in forward areas. I think if you put one of those kids in a game when there's a Cunha and a Neto in between them, I think you'll see more from them. Is that a fair comment, or are we judging them too harsh on not having really any service either?
I'm not sure. And I'd err on the side of Nocky's thoughts, really, that to be 18, 19 and make an impact in this league, you have to be pretty special. You know, the last special players we probably bought through were freaks in a way, weren't they? And Robbie Keane and Julian Lescott, you know, they had something at 17 that I don't see in these players. And you know, Nocky mentions Rooney. And again, it's a wild comparison because he's one of the best forwards, but his point is that he was ready to play men's Premier League football. These pair for me are just miles off it, and that's not a negative towards them. Like I said, I thought Chiwomi last night did absolutely everything you could ask of him. I thought he worked his socks off. Yeah. I thought he was brilliant. Just not at the level required. His touch isn't good enough. His train of thought isn't good enough. He doesn't get in front of his centre half. They're things that only come, obviously, with learning the game and playing football. So I get your point if he's got Neto and Cunha either side. But for me, those players are 2 or 3 yards ahead of these pair at the moment. And that's just how I see it.
Well, I think we saw when Cunha came on, even though he's not fully fit, the difference he made to our ball retention, little ball into space, 1-2, turn, touch. Wolves look a completely different team and it just shows the difference. And as you said, and I'll back that up from anyone that's going to criticise, that it's not a criticism of those players, but playing under 21s and under 18 football and then going straight to probably the most competitive league in world football is a huge ask. But I would say over the games that Chiwomi was probably performed better than Fraser, mainly because of his mobility. Fraser looked isolated with Sarabia, who hasn't got any pace. So that was always going to be a big ask. Whereas Chiwomi can press, he can try and run the channels a bit more. Did he have a lot of productivity? No, but you could see you're getting your money's worth in terms of the system because somebody could cover the ground and get out and about. So, yeah, great comments.
Again a bit off this. I mentioned it before. You know, Ellis Sims at Coventry is a great example. He's banging goals in left, right, and centre in the Championship. He looks a real player. At Everton, he was woeful. He was terrible. And
I think he had a spell at Hearts and did quite well, didn't he? Or Hibs. Yeah. I think he did a spell at Hibs and did quite well.
The golf in class is enormous. And there's no Everton fans that would have him back. But in the Championship, he looks lethal. And that's the difference. You're talking about strikers in, the, like you said, the best league in the world. And it's not easy for them. And, you know, they had a couple of lively strikers last night. You know, even Burnley have got good strikers at this level now. So,
I mean, they're bringing on Jay Rodriguez. And I know, obviously, he played for them down the road. He starts for us last night. If he's in the Wolves squad, he starts for Wolves. No question about it. So,
the biggest concern, and I know we're going to come on and talk about it, and I know Aston Villa have just gone 1-0 down, so that's even better, but you've got to look at where we are, and I think it is self-inflicted. Everyone's saying we're unlucky that we've got injuries. Hwang and Neto have got a track record of injuries. They've not played a full season between them since they've been here. They've not played over 30 games a season. So you've got two of your forwards that you know are injury prone. Bellegarde came and add niggles and not.
Who isn't really a forward? He's a creative midfielder.
But I'd sort of class him in that, yeah, in that bracket of sort of forward player. So you could argue there's also a bit of mismanagement there because you're relying on players that you've never had a full season out of. So, you know, well, some will say it's unlucky, some will say it's poor management.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go into that. I'm going to read a bit of what Gary O'Neill said out, and let's do the player ratings first and just go through the teams. Confirm there, Alex Richards tells us. It's 1-0 City. If anyone could tell me who scored as well, that'd be great. Got my dream team going on that.
Varchek, son. There's a Varchek.
Var's even doing me when I'm doing my podcast. What am I supposed to? I can't get away from it. Let's go through the players. And probably one of the best players on the pitch, along with Aitnori Nnoki, was Jose Sarr, who was absolutely outstanding again last night. I mean, I think since Cutler's come in as the goalkeeping coach, I think he's improved. I think his kicking and distribution can be erratic. But in terms of his actual shot stopping, I think he's having a great season for Wolves.
Yeah, I think he was probably man of the match for us. Some of the saves were absolutely fantastic. There was one in particular where it's bobbled in from a corner and the lads just lashed it and it's just an instinct save to tip it over. And I thought he was excellent. His distribution was really good. He played out from the back well. He was busy, but didn't have a chance with the goal. It's whether he's in space or not, he's a hell of a strike. But I thought he was excellent. It's probably one of his best games for us.
He was good. Tyler, tell me through the centre-backs last night. Toti Gomez, and I know you've got a poster of in your bedroom, and Max Kilman as the centre-backs.
I'll criticise Toti. I thought last night he was excellent. I couldn't criticise his game at all. I thought he stood up to the physical challenge. He won, I think, all of his headers. He was decent on the ball. I thought that was one of his better games, to be honest. And I'll criticise, but I'll also praise when it's due. I thought it was very good. And Kilman as well, I thought, played well. Again, seen some tweets sort of questioning him. He played a lovely ball for Aitnori for that.
Very unlucky, yeah. Very unlucky. But what I would say about Toti, though, is when I saw the lineup, I could see the thinking because this Burnley side have got a lot of pace and like the old Burnley of old. And I could see why he was in the team. And I was pleasantly surprised by actually how he looked like a left-sided centre-back that had played there before. Yeah. So, and I don't mean that as a, like I'm surprised he could play well because he's had plenty of good games at left centre-back, but he can be limited on the ball. However, last night, I'm with you, I thought it was really good. Sorry, you were going on about Maxi's through ball.
Yeah, I thought it was a lovely ball for Aitnori. And he gets a lot of criticism. I'm not sure why. I personally think he's a really good player, to be honest. But again, it's all about opinions, isn't it? But I thought the defence stood up to the challenge last night. Nocky's dad was talking about it on the way home. You know, we were put under pressure. We were put on the back foot.
But they dealt with it.
They stood up to it fairly well. And although Sarr's made saves, again, the sort of saves that you'd expect him to make to a point. So, I thought they did well, the two centre-backs or the three centre-backs, depending on what formation you think you played.
Now, I know, I think Bobby Smith put a tweet out, put Toti up front. Well, he's played everywhere else. We might see it before the end of the season. And he has got a win against Villa. And imagine if he played up front and see Tyler's face after he scored a win at the end of the season. But I'm not sure we'll see that, Bobby. But thank you for your comment on there. Who knows? What do we know? We never get a prediction right. Lucky, moving on to the fullbacks of Hugo Bueno and Nelson Semedo.
I thought Semedo was really good. He was strong. He was getting forward. A few times he got in behind with some really good movement. Good game from him. Bueno, I think he struggled. I think he really struggled. He was like a rabbit in the headlights most of the game.
He hadn't played for a while, so I'm loath to be overcritical of him.
Yeah, I'm not being critical, but you can only take him on that performance. You know, you've asked me about him yesterday, and yesterday I thought he was poor. He feels like he'd regressed a little bit. Scared of the ball, giving the ball away. Every time he got the ball, I think they identified he was a bit of an opportunity for him. So they were closing him down. He was losing possession. He did improve slightly as the game went on, but he's a player who I think, when he was getting the opportunities, was playing some good stuff, and he looked like he belonged in the team. And now he looks like he gives us a problem down that side, because you want Ait Nouri further forward, but you're leaving yourself really vulnerable in the left back and the left wing back position if you do that. So he worked hard. No criticism for his effort, but I thought he struggled.
Just to jump into him. What I would say is, I don't really think recall him playing left back for Wolves before. He's always been a wing back, so you've had that protection of whether it's Max Kilman, whether it's in the past Max Kilman, whether it's Toto. He's had that protection of somebody next to him. Whereas a left back and a left wing back, you've got far more defensive responsibilities, where he's better at going forward and getting in the final the final third, as opposed to defending. So I am sympathetic to him as well for that.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But at the same time, this isn't, you know, we're not going back 15, 20 years now where it's a rigid, you're a left back, you're a right back, you're a centre-half. You've got to be fluid in different formations and different systems. Like we've seen with Totti. Totti's had his critics, but he seems to play everywhere on the pitch. Lamina plays everywhere on the pitch. He's played as an attacker, he's played as a midfielder. So you're asking him to do a similar job down the same side, really. So I don't think it's a massive expectation for him to be able to look a little bit stronger in what should be his natural position. So yeah, I think he's a player who needs to play to build himself up, get that confidence going and get himself comfortable in the game. But I thought yesterday he looked like the weak link in our back line.
Moving on to Nelson. Okay.
Yeah, I thought he had a really good game. I thought he was really solid, actually. I thought he was an intelligent performance. He's been probably our most consistent performer all season. I know he won't probably get spoken about in the player of the season, but in terms of someone you can absolutely rely on, he's up there now. He's one of the best. He's one of the most important players in our squad, I would say. And he got in behind. His movement was good. He looked dangerous for us. The final ball still probably isn't there for him, but he's not really had anything to hit, which is what we found a few times yesterday and throughout the season. But in terms of him as a player now, he's one of the first names on the team sheet without question.
Absolutely. Moving on to the centre midfield, Tyler, probably, as we mentioned, our best partnership in an area of the pitch I thought we did quite well. Those two guys put a huge shift in again, as they always do. Mario Lemina and João Gomes.
Yeah, I think you've probably summed it up. It was just a good shift, wasn't it? They worked hard. You know, they battled. They did everything you'd expect them to do. Not the easiest game to get on the ball and try and play, really, but... they were industrious and it's what the performance you'd expect from them both, wasn't it? It was hard working, you know, solid. Gomez brilliant sometimes, you know. I think he's better on the ball than I think he sometimes gets credit for.
Yeah.
Lamina the same, you know, going down and being a bit naughty sometimes, killing the game. You know, it's that sort of mouse that you want.
Since we've been in the Premier League, we've been soft and nice, but everyone else has been playing the game.
And like Knocker said, if you don't know what your other nine are, you're putting them two in centre midfield and you worry about the rest later. And I think we all probably know that's the case now, don't we?
Absolutely. I think he was very unlucky with his diving header as well. I know he's at a stretch in full tilt, he hasn't got time, but I think did it clip the outside of the post?
Yeah,
he's really close. I mean, it's on target, it's a goal. It's so unlucky. Not sure if that was another Sarabia ball, Tyler, I don't know, but I'm sure.
I think it was Ait Nouri, but don't start him off against someone.
Well, that's funny she would say that, because we'll move on now to Pablo
Sarabia. Don't give him Sarabia. It's not 9 o'clock yet, so we're in trouble. I've never been so scared of a friend in my whole life. When he's got all that tackle. My lad was there.
Look, I thought the ball he put in was good. I thought he put a decent ball into the box. Apparently Villa have just scored, which has made the Sarabia talk even more disappointing. But at the end, it's, you know, that's Duran, that's their reserve striker who's come on and got themselves a goal at Man City. That's the importance of a squad, but that's way off topic at the minute. Look, I thought Sarabia put a good ball in for the box. And, you know, he's a good ball, good header, good goal. pulled out of a tackle. He just didn't. He didn't have a lot ahead of him to hit, but he's one of the senior players. I expect more from him. I expect him to be taking the game by the scruff of the neck, controlling it, bringing players in, dictating where everybody goes. I thought he was really poor yesterday. I don't think it was a very good showing from him at all. I expect better from a player of his quality, to be honest. Albeit he needs people ahead of him to hit, and he didn't have that. So I'll be as diplomatic as I can.
And it's fair feedback. It is fair feedback. He struggles in this team because he's the one breaking, but he just hasn't got the pace to break.
We said it yesterday. We said yesterday, didn't we, that he's a luxury player, but you can't have luxury players at Burnley because we're just not in a position to do that. He's a great player if you're 2-0 up or if you're 3-0 up.
Well, not just that. I think he's somebody that if he has a Hwang, Neto, Cunha, the players with the afterburners that can get there, he's the player that can pick those players out in important positions. There's nobody better at Wolves than picking someone out than Pablo Sarabia in attacking areas. Like that through ball he put for Mario for the winner against Spurs. When he's in those high-pressure moments, you haven't got a chance to think, he'll find the player. And if he's and I do feel sorry for him because if he's got nothing in front of him, which he hasn't, then, I mean, I tweeted before the game that hopefully he'll have more round into it. And he still didn't. But when you have Neto's runs and Cunha's runs and Hwang looking to play off the shoulder, it'll make Sarabia look a far better footballer because if he's got the talent but he's got no one to play to, what's he supposed to... He had one opportunity to proper cross it and Wolf scored. So, granted, though, Nocky, I'm with you on what you're saying in terms of a delicate performance in terms of his tackling, shall we say. Tyler, tell me about Matt Doherty and Ryan Aitnora.
Yeah, we touched upon it. I thought Doherty did well, really. I thought he could be proud of his performance. He worked hard, no mistakes, did the dirty stuff well, won his headers from the goal kicks. Like I said, he makes a nice run, doesn't he? He's a clever footballer, to be fair. And that's one thing he does give you, is that run and that outlet. And it gives the opposition something to think about. Aitnora, running out of adjectives, really. Just stick him in number 10 and just let him play. I think that's what I'd do now for the rest of the season.
Go and enjoy yourself because he can take it.
It's just sometimes it's stupid how easy it is. He was picking the ball up with someone right up his backside, for want of a better phrase, and then he's gone, and he skipped round, and then he's gone around the second one, and I think he sometimes finds it a little bit too easy. I think that's the only... It's not a criticism, but sometimes I think he's on a different level to other players, and then he sort of switches off and forgets, and I honestly would genuinely think about getting him like a free role, either side, number 10, playing the way you want, mate, because he's that good. I genuinely think he's that good.
Yeah, I think we've missed a trick not playing him higher up earlier on against Cov. I think we should have changed at half-time. I think he should have started higher up against Villa to give us a chance. I understand why you want to trust him because he's actually a pretty good one-on-one defender now. He's quite reliable there and pretty solid when he's playing next to Toti and them two work, so I get that. I just think in those games... Earlier on, we should have been playing someone with talent that can go past anybody. Yes. So, last but not least, Nocky, Chuome, lots of running, lots of effort. I know we've covered him a bit before, but I mean, he's going to be starting against West Ham. I don't think we've got a choice. Cunha will probably come on for 25 minutes the next time. So, but what I would say, I think he's definitely put himself in the pecking order ahead of Fraser now.
Worked really hard, got himself into some decent positions. He's raw, he's young, and he's not developed yet. I mean, there was an opportunity where he got himself into space in the first half, and there was a through ball there for him, and the through ball came in, and he just didn't have the composure and the ability to take it past the defender. He just got bullied out of it, and that was his biggest problem. Every time he had the ball, he was bullied out of it. But that's, you know, I think for his age, that's probably where you expect him to be. But he didn't shy away, he didn't hide. He was always looking for the ball. He was always an option. And, you know, he could have scored if Aitnori had squared it. So he was getting himself into positions. But it's a big ask for a player of that age with very little experience in the game to be coming in against an established Burnley team like that. But he didn't do himself any harm. And I don't think there's any criticism for anything he did. He did what he was there to do. He won us a few free kicks in and around the area. And he was always available to receive the ball. So I think he can be proud of his work.
Absolutely. You are listening and watching episode 94 of the Wolves Report. Chris Tyler, Mark Nock and myself, Ryan Lester. Post-game, Gary O'Neill said a few things that raised a few eyebrows, should I say, and it's also been backed up by what Max Kilman said post-game in terms of a small squad. And also Marion Lamina on his Instagram today has also talked about the small group and how we need the support from the fans. So post-game last night, Gary O'Neill, if you've missed it already, said, from my point of view, this is something we flagged to the club in January, and Matt Hobbs, to be fair, he was very good with it. Where we warned the club, we were overloading the players. It's a small group and we're using them an awful lot. There is a risk of injury, our injury record getting worse in the second half of the season. And on top of that, we lost a couple of attackers. I explained to the club, we've been in a really difficult situation from that point of view. And from understanding my squad, where my squad were, giving it every game and where we might end up. And Matt Hobbs was on board with that. So, massive comments there for me. I've heard the audio myself. It wasn't aggressive or it wasn't a rant. He said it more articulate than I did then, because I was trying to struggling to read my own handwriting. But it's a fair point. Now, there's 2 points on this, guys. Is this something that should be kept in house, in terms of, or is this something that you want to hear as a fan? Because I know we talked about, we flagged it to the club, because it felt to me like there might be a bit of a them and an us kind of thing, when in reality Matt Hobbs, Gary O'Neill and Wolverhampton Wanderers are all Wolverhampton Wanderers. And that felt like a bit of two guys talking about the others, when really it should be together. I don't know. Start with Tyler, because Nocky's not breathing. Tyler, your take on that?
I think you keep it in-house. I don't think it's necessary to make those comments. I think we all know where we are with Fosun. I mean, Knocker called it probably about 3 seasons ago that they're not going to spend any more of their own money, and we're a self-sufficient model now. So I don't get why there's still an element of surprise that they're not throwing money into it, because it is, we are where we are. Like I said, I think the injuries, they're not bad luck. I think some of it is down to mismanagement. If you've got 2 forwards that haven't played a full season, to not have any backups is negligent, I'd say. To then let 2 go out on loan without replacing is ridiculous. People are saying, well, you've got to learn from these mistakes. We've made these mistakes for the last 2 years. We did it with Traore, and we've done it with others where we've let them go and not got a replacement in. So I don't have much sympathy for us as a football club with where we are at the moment. I think Fosun are clear with what they're going to do moving forward. And ultimately, O'Neill's got to either work within those restraints or not. And someone put a cracking comment at the start of this saying, oh, you know, give it the big one when we win in front of the South Bank, but then have a bit of a whinge when we don't. You know, I'm sorry, it works both ways. You know, his job still is to find a way of getting the best out of these players and getting football results. So don't give it the fist pumps to the South Bank and Mr. Big Rocks when we're winning and then blame your owners when we're not. That doesn't sit that well with me, to be honest. But
for anyone listening to the recording afterwards, Ian Darby said, fist pumps when to the fans when we win, blames Fosun when we lose. Sorry, but keep it all in-house. Ian Darby, great comment to start off the show. It's filtered in because of Tyler's memory that's better than mine. Thanks for being part of the show. Nocky, your take on those comments?
Yeah, I understand why he's done it. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I think he should be in-house, but I understand why he's done it, because similar to us, he can see the season kind of petering out and he wants to have a little bit of I tried to do more, I tried to get us higher, and I could have done it if I'd have had the backing. I'm sort of going round and round with this. I understand both sides of it. I mean, we spent a lot of money last Christmas to make sure we stayed in the division. The target this year was to make sure we stay up. We've done that. They had a choice to make, didn't they? Do you bring in a striker for more money than you're going to pay in 4 or 5 months when you hit the summer window, and potentially not finish that much higher? It's a calculated risk. Would it have pushed us into Europe? I personally think if we had bought in a striker, we're probably still in the FA Cup and we've probably still got a chance of getting into the top 7. Both have now gone, in my opinion. But I do think it was a calculated risk. We'd scored more goals than we had in any other point of the season when we hit that window. So we were free-flowing, we were scoring goals. We were losing players, but we were losing them in a balanced way. We'd lose one, want to come back. So I understand the logic of not going and spending unnecessary funds when you don't need to do that, especially if the players you can bring in for 3-4 million quid, you can then get on a free in a couple of months. So I do understand the logic behind it. From a fan's point of view, we want to be pushing, we want to be going up the ladder, we want to get as high as we can. I think where you'll see if it's the right move or the wrong move is what we do in the summer. Now, if we go out there and we spend some serious money, we do improve where we need to improve. We clear out the deadwood and we're looking two brand new number nines, more attacking options, more attacks, more options from the wide positions and midfield defensively, then it's probably vindicated because you've given yourself a full building block to go from, as opposed to throwing some of that FFP money at it in the January window. If we do what we've done for the last few seasons and left ourselves short, then you kind of see where the ambition lies. And I think it's a massive summer for Fosun, because I think at the end of this window, we'll know exactly what the ambition is for the club, whether we're trying to survive or not. So as much as I'm frustrated that we didn't bring anybody in, I think there has to be a little level of balance as to where we are now with the decisions that we've made, and they have took us halfway up the league and they've put us in a good, stable position. So we were in a really strong position with no injuries when we were coming out the back of that window. It's only afterwards that it's all kind of fell apart. But again, that is quite predictable, because the further down the line you get, the more likely you are to pick up these little niggles. But we needed players, we needed reinforcements, but I understand why they made this decision not to do that. I've probably got a bit around the bush there, but I'm just trying to understand that there's different sides to it, and I can understand the rationale.
Yeah, absolutely, I can understand it. And to try and devil's advocate, give some balance. Now, I'm not Fosun out. Fosun have given me and you guys the best few years we've had watching Wolverhampton Wanderers, FA Cup semi-final, European quarter-final, seventh consecutive double seventh finishes in the Premier League, an amazing Championship season. So
how long are you going to keep harping on about that?
Let me finish. Let me get to the next point. And I've got to acknowledge both sides. So that is true, and I'll acknowledge that. However, Tyler, it doesn't mean we can't be critical now from the mistakes that they've made. Now, there's two ways of looking at it in terms of why Wolves where they're at. Because Wolves made multiple bad mistakes and overspent and didn't manage and got themselves in a situation last January where they'd done it that badly. If they didn't invest, they're probably going to get relegated. Craig Dawson, Mario Lemina, and it turns out now Matheus Cunha, fantastic footballer, have sent Wolves in a different direction, way above the relegation zone. So then they've had to sell last summer. But do I credit them? Because they've got themselves in trouble. Now they've got themselves out of trouble, whereas Everton didn't get themselves out of trouble. They were blasé to it. Oh, we built a new stadium. Forest, oh, we didn't have a squad. They're all making excuses and getting in trouble, where Wolves have done the correct thing. So acknowledgement that you've rectified the mistakes that you've made, and we've had a better season. However, though, Tyler, the mismanagement of the squad, which are, in my opinion, of letting the numbers dwindle so badly in terms of the areas of the pitch where we're seeing kids who've never played first team football before, for me, is unacceptable.
And it's not even the kids. It's Max Kilman, it's Toto Gomez, who's banging on their door to take their place. There's no competition in the squad. Samedo, comfortable as anything because he knows he's the first name on the team sheet. It's not just about getting injuries and then struggling to replace those players. It's about having a squad that could compete for 38 games. And we haven't got the options. Boubacar Traoré, nowhere near it. Hugo Bueno, nowhere near it. They're our reserve players, but they're not getting any football. And they're not getting any football because they're not trusted by the manager to be good enough. So he's working with what he thinks is a squad of 12, 13 players, which is unacceptable. And Lemina and Gomez, you can't keep flogging them pair every week because you can see what's going to happen with the next injury. And, you know, Nocky summed it up brilliantly. He's given both sides of the argument. And I suppose it depends which side of the fence you sit on for it. But I don't see how we can keep talking about the FA Cup semi-final and we got promoted. We got promoted with Mick McCarthy. We went to an FA Cup semi-final with Mark McGee. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's a small-time mentality and it's time to try and kick on and progress. And it's unfortunate that for whatever reason that we've talked about, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's fair comments. And there's also, and I know people talk about this, and I think there's sometimes an expectancy that owners should just keep throwing in endless amounts of money. As long as Fosun keep Wolves out of financial trouble and all their contracts are honoured for their tenure of how long they own Wolves or move on, whatever, as long as they're managing Wolves accordingly, and that's all we can ask for, to be honest, in terms of the finances. We shouldn't have to expect that they put money in. Now, I don't think it's feasible unless you are the incredible sort of method of work that Brighton have got, to an extent Brentford with selling players on, because obviously they're going to sell Tony in the summer. So those clubs are doing it and doing it well. I think Wolves would like to do that, but in terms of having that whole setup from top to bottom to be recruiting from France and South America consistently on a regular basis with a regular style of football with an identity, Wolves look a long way off that at the moment. I mean, we've just got a mix and match squad that's probably overachieved from a brilliant season under Gary O'Neill's own guidance, to be honest. So
I think just on that, Roy, I mean, last thing for me on that would be, there was a lot of fear around FFP, wasn't there? And hindsight's a fantastic thing. Had they known that you'd maybe only lose 4 points, there could have been slightly more ambition into the season, because I think no one knew. It was unprecedented in this division, wasn't it? You don't take points off teams in the Premier League. So I don't think anyone knew what was coming. I think there was such a desperation to make sure we weren't on the naughty list that we did maybe play a little bit safer than we should have done. And we are self-sufficient. Being a self-sufficient model means that we're safe in terms of being a stable football club, but it also means that you've got a ceiling that you're going to hit. And I think I'm right in saying we've got the fourth lowest wage budget in the division, which you're never going to achieve anything if you're doing that, because you're just becoming a production line for bringing a player in, developing them, selling them on, and hoping the next batch you bring in are going to do that. At some point, there's got to be a conversation around what the long-term ambition is. If it is just to remain in the Premier League for as long as we can, fine, but you know, tell us that. If it's going to be that we're going to try and kick on, they've got to kind of show that with the deals that they do this summer. But what they have done really well is they have spent money, and they've spent money on some big money. Guedes was big money. Cunha was big money. Silva was big money. The best signings we've probably made are Lamina and Gomez, and that was, what, 15 million and 9 million. So it's not just about going out and throwing money at it.
It's about how you spend it, not what you
spend. You've got to bring the right players in. The South American market is massive. Some quality players in there for us. So I'm comfortable with the model. And I was comfortable with Silva going. I was comfortable with Kalajic going. But you've got to have a little bit of short-term thinking.
We all expected a player to come in, Inoki, didn't we? We're all happy. Kalajic not starting him. Fabio, get minutes, fine. See if you can get your move, get your confidence up.
Yeah, nobody, but we know where the long-term
podcast expected no players to come in on top of that. No. It's ridiculous.
The model's pretty clear to see. I mean, you know where the long-term plan is. They've sent Chiquinho out. They've sent Yerson Mosquera out. They'll come back next season. They'll be expected to be first-team players. So potentially that's your replacement for Dawson if he's, you know, if his legs have gone, or if he's not fit enough to play next season, if he doesn't play quite such a heavy part. Chiquinho could be your Neto replacement. You've got Noah Lamina. He's going to be the next one. He'll probably go out on loan next season, then he'll come back. And the model's to pre-plan, and I understand that. You've got to have things in the future that you can work on and develop players into the squad. But you've also got to look at the now as well, because I do genuinely think a number nine comes in, we don't lose to Coventry. We potentially get something at Villa Park, because they weren't that much better than us. They were better, but they weren't miles ahead of us. And we maybe win yesterday as well. And you know, if we'd have spent that 3 or 4 million on a striker, which is maybe, I think we're all thinking it was probably Che Adams, it would have cost us 3-4 million quid. You get what, a million and a half for every position?
I think Brozier, the loan was agreed. I think that was it. And I mean, what a difference he'd have made to us.
He would, but you know, the money you've spent on that, is it false economy? Because if you finish four places further up the league, which I think we'll finish about 12th, if you finish four places further up the league, you've paid for his loan anyway, and you may be in Europe. So I just think there needs to be a little bit of strategy about what we're doing in the short term as well as the long-term planning, which I think the long-term planning is really good.
Great chat there from Noki. Superb analysis on that. Let's do some questions. Still on the same sort of subject, which fills in nicely. Greg, regular contributor to the Wolves Report. Greg, are the hierarchy capable of providing the support to that Gary O'Neill requires, or will we be looking for another manager in May and June? Tyler?
I don't think we'll be looking for another manager. I think Gary O'Neill's not stupid, is he? He's an intelligent guy, and he knows he's still the manager of a large football club and had a step up from his time at Bournemouth. He should know the restraints he's working in, because he took the job under that premise. We know why his predecessor left, for the same reasons, basically. So I don't think it should be a surprise to him of where we are and what the restraints are from Fosun. And where's he going to go? You know, we've talked about it with some of the players, but I just don't see him leaving at the moment. And I think if we sell to buy, I think we'll probably have to make one big sale and then look to bring in 3 or 4 players to go around that. But yeah, Noki spoke brilliantly there, and I couldn't add anything to what he's already said. But are the hierarchy capable? Jury's out, isn't it?
That's one of the next questions, so we'll feed back into that in a minute. Noki, Chris Fisher, on the same sort of lines, do O'Neill's comments sound similar to what J-Lo said? That put Julian out of favour with Fosun. Is Gary O'Neill stating the fact, or could there be early posturing that he could be looking out elsewhere?
He's building his own reputation, isn't he? You know, he's done really well at Wolves. His stock's high. He doesn't want that to fall off a cliff because he can't bring in the players that he wants to bring in. I think the difference with Lopetegui, I don't think Lopetegui fell out of favour with Fosun. I think he asked to leave. He wanted to go. I don't think they would have ever got rid of him and pushed him out the door.
I think, from his comments, though, and I think that would have upset a lot of people, the way it was that he was looking for the sack. That's me giving my opinion. I'm not saying that, but it felt like to me he was trying to angle a way out because it was getting angrier and angrier. And he was trying to build a stepping stone. Or you've got to push me now. I've said too much. That's my opinion. I don't know if it's fact. I know I had some of his family relatives tweeting me angry when I said that, but that's just my opinion.
I think he was looking for an out at that point, but if they'd have said you've got £100 million to spend, he wouldn't have been pushing to get out. He'd have been looking to improve the squad. So it's, you know, he didn't come into this role purely to get out of it again. If he'd have walked out of Wolves and walked into another football club, he could see exactly what would have happened. In fact, he's still unemployed. I think we could probably assume that he was interested in being here for the long term, but the budget, maybe he was promised, maybe he was told something, just wasn't there for him. I don't see Gary O'Neill having the same kind of relationship. He seems like a very intelligent guy who's balanced in the way that he approaches things.
On to everything in terms of the coaching.
He'll know the bigger picture, but he'll also need to put a little bit of pressure on Fosun to say that, look, my stock's rising. I need a little bit more investment if you want me to push this to the next level, or I'll leave. And I think the only club I could see him going to at the moment is West Ham. If they were to make a change, which I think they probably will, he's got to be on that list. But again, he's intelligent enough to know that that is one of the most aggressive fan bases around in terms of the way they treat their managers. I mean, you've got a manager who's won a competition in Europe and they've hounded him out this season. So
I don't even imagine they're the easiest owners to work for either. Let's bang through a couple more questions before we move on to Saturday's game against West Ham. Tyler, going back onto what you said, keeping things in a rhythm. Todd, is outside investment our hope this summer, or do Wolves have a plan?
You'd like to think they have a plan, won't you, after what we've talked about in regards to mistakes already made. And I think Knocker talked about what the plan is. It's that self-sufficient model building for the future. So I think they do have a plan now. I think there is a strategy. You could argue it's a bit of a risky one if the young players don't reach the potential that you hope they will. Outside investment, I mean, you know, they're an investment company, aren't they? So it's something they've been talking about. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to answer that question from a finance perspective, but I'd like to think that the self-sufficient model should be enough to keep us competitive, because it does work. We've seen it work with teams, haven't we? So there's no reason we can't be clever with our business now.
Absolutely. I don't think as well it'll be. I mean, if you remember the start of this season, I know it doesn't always happen this way. Jeff said, we're going to have to keep the purse strings tight this season. But when we've got past this season, there'll be more money to spend in the summer. So you would hope so after we've made like 70, £75 million profit. You would imagine this summer, and it is not an ideal thing to say, but we have to face the facts that Ant Nor is going to attract attention. Joao Gomez is going to attract attention. Pedro Neto, not as much, but he will. I mean, his ratio, goal involvements, he's off the chart. He just can't stay fit. So someone would still be interested in him. So for me, I think one or two of those players go this summer. All three could go if stupid money comes, and then we'll see how we go from there. But we need a little bit more depth. For me, starting off, I know people won't like this. It doesn't sound really ambitious, but Che Adams on a free is the ideal. That kind of snapping someone in, it makes a difference to our squad now. Even with our best 11, that's someone that's going to be in and around the picture. Something a little bit different. But hopefully, again, they've got things eyed up in France or the South American market as well. Todd, thank you for being part of the show. Saturday afternoon, Wolves play at Molineux again, facing West Ham United. Incredibly, even after a couple of quiet results, if Wolves beat West Ham on Saturday, I think my maths is right, Wolves go above West Ham. I think that's correct, which would be quite remarkable. However, I think this is a huge game, a huge task. Nocky, you look at the likes of Jared Bowen, Antonio. They're a real handful, strong. They tuck in and break quickly. Now, for me, guys, one of the worst tactical days Gary O'Neill had was away at West Ham, when he went at West Ham and played to their hands, because those guys love to counter. I think Wolves have to be a little bit patient on Saturday and draw them out. They don't like balls in behind them, but quite often, when it's nil-nil, they tuck in. Nocky.
Yeah, I think you've got to go through at the back. You've got to go back to what you used to. Three at the back, two wing backs, two midfield, and just try and be as solid as you can. Again, my concern is the ball's not going to stick, and I think these have got a lot of quality going forward. Bowen in particular is going to, he's going to pull into space. He's going to get plenty of opportunities to play. They've got some real pace up front as well. So this is a really, really difficult game. I think they're a good team to play with intent. The one thing they will give us are opportunities, because they will attack and they hold quite a high line. But it's whether we've got the quality in the final third to expose that. You don't see too many changes in terms of personnel, because we haven't got a lot that we can rotate, which probably means Cunha starts on the bench, and I struggle to see how we get anything out of the game without him.
Yeah, Tyler?
Yeah, I think it'll be a tough game. I've had us not to win again all season, haven't I? So that's, you can probably tell my thought process. But the problem is, guys, it's a very basic comment. We have to score at least two goals to win the game at the moment, and I just don't see how we do that. So that's where we are. I think I have us down for a draw, to be honest. I don't think West Ham are great. I wouldn't be too worried about them. But and in a way, it might play into our hands. Let them have a bit of possession and, you know, try and hit them at their own game. But
I think after what we witnessed at the Olympic Stadium earlier in the season, is that we just played into their hands. We pressed them and they just countered us and flew at us. And they are one of the best teams in the... They're not always pretty or fluent, but if you let West Ham counter, they will hurt anybody. Now, I don't think Wolves can do that. I think we have to be patient and try and draw them out. It might be a stinky game, but I'd rather be in a stinky game than try and press them and the game be over after 20 minutes. Because if Wolves were two down, there was, with this set of players, there isn't going to be a way back. So I think on Saturday, for me, it's all about patience. Draw them out, keep the possession. You know what I mean? Let them have the ball. Even if it's 2-5 to start with, to draw, and then start hitting that. I mean, do we do 8-0 further up Nockey? It's a real predicament, because that means Bueno then's playing against Jared Bowen, and I'm not sure I want that.
We said it last night, but you just want to be in the game with half an hour to go when you can look to bring Kuna on. And again, it's not a great place to be after 5 or 6 years in the Premier League. But if you level with half an hour to go, you know, you've got a chance. But ain't always at left wing back for me against this. You know, these are a good side. And try and be 0-0, 1-1 with half an hour to go and bring Kuna on and see if you can nick it. I think that's where we're probably going to be, isn't it?
Nocky, you said at Villa Park we should have gone with a 3 in midfield and gone 5-3-2. Is this the kind of game for that again? You bring Doyle into midfield, have a midfield 3, have Doyle sitting in front of the 3 centre-backs, neat and tidy, the 2 pressers in midfield, Sarabia, your favourite player, just in front, and then Chiuomi again. Is that the kind of setup do you think we should aim to there if we're not moving Aitnori? Have we lost Nocky? he looks absolutely stunned. I don't know if he's gone.
He looks a bit constipated there, doesn't he?
He's stuck.
I don't know. I mean, can you realistically play Sarabia and Chiuomi as your two? That's your only quandary. But I've just said about putting Aitnori back at left wing back, so you might have to. It's just a sad situation to be in, isn't it, ultimately? But
how about that? Nocky's on the show twice.
So good to name me twice.
Nocky, have you got on the show twice? It's incredible.
Can I get
it
over?
Looks like a pair of testicles, doesn't it? Like, who them two there?
We've got Mark Nock and his twin brother. Oh, he's gone now, he's gone.
That's more than a pound in the metre, sorry.
Nock, just saying then about the three stinkers in centre midfield, is that the way to go on Saturday? But then Tyler said, can you just go with Sarabia and Chiuomi up front because the ball's going to keep coming back? Because if we sit in and stink it and frustrate them, for me, then if you've got three across midfield there and you've got Toti at left centre back, you can afford Aitnori to get forward. You can take a lot of risks, and that's probably your right ball in the game then, when it's sort of an offset sort of 3-4-3, 3-5-2.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against having the three stinkers in there. You've got to show a little bit of ambition to win the game, haven't you? That's the thing. And the only thing we're really lacking is someone in the attacking area, isn't it? So do you change your whole system and formation just to try and accommodate that? I'm kind of tempted to just do what we would like, what we'd normally do, so 3 at the back, 2 wing backs, 2 midfield, and try and have a little bit more ambition going forward and just try and put them under a bit of pressure, because, you know, they're only 3 points above us, so they're not that much better than us, are they? But it's whether we can create the chances to do that. If we play with a 3 across midfield, I'm kind of think we're going to strangle ourselves a little bit more in the attacking areas. So let's go with the two and try and have a little bit more up front, and maybe, you know, maybe you get lucky and something drops.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Me, I'm quite happy to stink the place out, and then it's 0-0 and you bring Cunha on, you see where you go from there. Because I think if we go at them too much and they score early, I think we're really going to struggle to come back. But let's see. It's prediction time now. Tyler is definitely not going to predict Wolves to win. We've had a little bet between now and the end of the season, which I'm looking forward to collecting on Saturday afternoon. Don't think so. So, Tyler, start off. Give us your prediction for Wolverhampton Wanderers v West Ham at United.
Well, I'm two games right so far. Oh, nice. I've got eight to go. I think we'll get a point. I think it'll be 1-1. Like I said, these aren't great. They're all right. But it's not like we've got Liverpool at home, is it? Let's be honest. So, I think 1-1. And I think... it's only our fullbacks that score, isn't it? So Ryan ain't Laurie again.
And Nocky's twin brother.
I don't want to be negative. I keep pulling us to lose, but I just don't think we've got enough to score. I think it'd be 2-0 West Ham.
Surprise, surprise. 1-0 Wolves, Mateus Cunha for me. This has been episode 94 of the Wolves Report. Thank you to Chris, Tyler, Mark Knock. I've been your host, Ryan Lester. Look forward to speaking to you next week after Wolves have beat West Ham. The Wolves.